This evening at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., worshipers will gather to remember the life of Matthew Shepard. On October 6, 1998, the University of Wyoming student was brutally attacked because he was gay. His murder divided the community and shocked the world.
Matthew Shepard was beaten last weekend, tied to a wooden fence by two men who met Shepard in a bar in Laramie, Wyoming. 18 hours later, a passing bicyclist summoned help after almost mistaking Shepard's bloodied body for a scarecrow. Early this morning, Matthew Shepard passed away.
We've already got laws in place to punish the individuals that killed this boy. That was wrong. But that boy's lifestyle is also wrong.
A couple of very sick and twisted people caused something to happen that nobody in Wyoming accepts. It's that simple.
Two men were convicted for their role in the murder. After the trial, Matthew's dad, Dennis Shepard, spoke with reporters.
More than a year ago, our son Matthew was murdered because he was gay. He was the victim of a brutal crime motivated by hatred. The outcome of this trial will never bring Matthew back to us, but we believe that justice was served today.
10 years after Shepard's death, I was a rookie reporter at Wyoming Public Radio in Laramie. Even a decade later, I could sense the community's wound still throbbed beneath the surface. In a small college town where the wind blows in relentless gales across the high plains, few people were prepared for the onslaught of attention this case would bring. As part of our newsroom's special broadcast, I spoke with local reporters who reflected on the biggest story of their careers. Rob Black worked for the AP.
A lot of reporters would come in trying to dissect Laramie, trying to figure out, you know, how all this hate came from this one little town, and what is it in Laramie? Is it in the water? Is it in the genes? What is it about Laramie and Wyoming in particular?
That sound is from a story that first aired 15 years ago. Here's more of my reporting from 2008 with reporter Carrie Drake, who covered the story for the Casper Star Tribune.
It's just something that pervades your just kind of whole sense of what's right and what's wrong. There was a part of me that had to think of, am I doing this story justice?
Drake says the work was exhausting. The story unfolded quickly, too quickly to realize the impact it had on him emotionally. With time to reflect, Drake says the story changed everyone's world.
Including mine for a long time.
Kerry Drake's life is joined with the Matthew Shepard story in another way. He's a character in the Laramie Project, a play that chronicles the drama surrounding Shepard's death. When the production came to Casper, Drake auditioned for the role of Kerry Drake. He says he had to.
Part of it was probably because I did feel like I was a part of that event. It just kind of changed my life.
The soft-spoken reporter had never acted before, but he got the part.
Even after doing it for, you know, I think we had 10 shows, there were still scenes that, you know, I would cry at. And I think I kind of saved all my emotion from that time and was able to kind of get it out through the play. People will always remember Matthew Shepard. And I think he will always be a symbol of, you know, searching for the best in us, searching for tolerance.
Matthew Shepard would have turned 47 tomorrow. And to mark that occasion, a memorial will take place later this evening at Washington's National Cathedral, where his ashes are interred. Reverend Ann Kitch is the rector of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Phillipsburg, New Jersey. Her husband was Shepard's first cousin, and she will deliver the sermon. Reverend, welcome. It's really good to speak with you.
Thank you, Peter. It's good to be here.
And you were kind enough to share parts of the homily that you'll deliver later tonight at the National Cathedral Memorial. Mm-hmm. Could I ask you to read the opening passage?
Certainly. 25 years ago, I carried Matt's ashes in my lap as my spouse drove us to the church for the funeral. Our one-year-old safely buckled into a car seat in the back. We turned a corner and suddenly encountered hate. Protesters shouting and wielding hateful signs, Matt's face with ugly words, some of them carried by children. I instinctively shielded the precious burden in my lap as I simultaneously threw a mother's protective love over our own child, not wanting a wisp of that hate to touch them.
Hmm. What was it like for you to write that 25 years after Matthew's death?
For some reason, this year's been a lot more tender for me as an anniversary. But I also was just brought back to that moment. That's such a moment for me because we were so swept up with not only this incredible tragedy in our own family, but the way the world and media and strangers glommed onto it. And I still poignantly remember that moment of just, you know, being honored and quite moved that I was taking Matt's ashes to the church with us as we were going and turning a corner. And it was really like getting kicked in the gut to see these protesters. And that feeling just really came back to me. And of course, I mean, now our child is 26. And at the time, I knew so little about what it was to raise a child and how much the world can both hinder and harm what you want for your child. But I remember just knowing that somehow I wanted to protect them from the worst that the world can do.
And sometimes you can't.
And many times you can't.
There's something that can happen when people become well-known or even famous after death. They can be reduced to a single picture that accompanies every news story or defined by a single phrase. Like in Matthew's case, it's a gay University of Wyoming student who was brutally murdered, right? I mean, every story in the last 25 years has probably said something like that. Tell me about Matthew Shepherd, the person that you remember before any of this ever happened.
When I first met Matt, he was 6 years old. My husband is his cousin, is 13 years older. And I think what I most remember about Matt is his really engaging, quirky smile. He was a gentle soul and was so interested in people, sometimes also to the point of not being very practical about things. I remember a Thanksgiving where he had wanted to bring a very special treat and had gone out of his way to get these chocolates, but then realized that he didn't have money for the cab ride to where we were meeting him until, of course, he got there. But that was sort of like him. He was tiny by stature and just huge in how he lived.
You told us about the protesters who showed up at his funeral. In fact, Matthew didn't have a final resting place until his ashes were interred at the National Cathedral in 2018 because I understand the family was worried about his gravesite being desecrated.
Yeah.
When you're in that place today, what do you feel?
Well, I had the opportunity to be in the National Cathedral just a couple of months ago for a completely different kind of event, and I wound my way down to the chapel where Matt's ashes are interred. And the crypt itself was not open, but there's a plaque there. And that moment, it was just very sacred for me to go and see the plaque and touch it. You know, as an Episcopal priest, the National Cathedral has a particular sort of place in my experience. So for me, it's a kind of pilgrimage.
It is probably hard to believe that it's been 25 years.
It's impossible.
Yeah. And in that time, there have been, frankly, huge strides in the fight for equality. At the same time, there have been incredible setbacks. There are still attacks on gay nightclubs. There is this fierce debate in this country about transgender rights at state houses as they consider passing or even pass laws to restrict what bathroom people can use, what book they can read, who can play on a high school sports team. Reflecting back, how do you measure the progress in this fight that in many ways Matthew Shepherd's name helped move forward in the years since his death?
Well, sometimes I think we've made these huge steps, and then sometimes I'm fearful for people that I know and care about and how it's still dangerous to be someone other in the world. I think that Matt's parents, Judy and Dennis, particularly with their work with the Matthew Shepherd Foundation, have just done amazing things. I mean, even now, still the tagline for them is erase hate. And I think certainly in our society now, there's so much hateful behavior, hateful speech, hateful language, particularly, as you said, aimed at transgender folks and others. So on the one hand, you know, we've seen great strides with marriage equality and even the Episcopal Church, you know, changed their own canons in 2015 to allow for same-sex marriage. And then you see the pushback against that. But when I look at the younger people that I encounter in my work, They don't think that we should be making so many restrictions against people for other reasons. So I have to remain hopeful.
Do you think Matthew will be with you later tonight when you stand before the crowd at the cathedral?
I think Matt would be a little perplexed and somewhat bemused by all of the attention. But I think for me, it's the people that knew and loved Matt and all of the people that have been influenced by his story. That's who I think of being with me tonight, that over the years, 25 years worth of people who want to stand up and say that love speaks louder than hate.
Reverend Ann Kitch will give the homily at a memorial service for Matthew Shepherd tonight at Washington's National Cathedral. Matthew would have turned 47 years old tomorrow. Ann, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.